Why some people get slower internet than their neighbors, even if their bill is the same. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Kimberly Adams. At the beginning of the pandemic here on the show, we did a lot of reporting on how the internet is everything and how your access to it, or lack thereof, can shape how you learn, how you work, and whether you can get ahead in this economy. But a recent investigation from the nonprofit newsroom The Markup suggests we're still pretty far away from equitable access. Leon Yin is an investigative data journalist at The Markup and one of the authors of Dollars to Megabits. You may be paying 400 times as much as your neighbor for internet service.
We found that four major providers were charging the same price for drastically different speeds, and that the people who are paying the worst deals tend to live in areas that are lower income, majority people of color, and also from historically redlined areas.
That seems like a pretty shocking and sweeping generalization. Was this really showing up in all of these cities?
That's right. We collected a representative sample of each of these cities by putting in addresses into the websites of these providers and getting back the cheapest and oftentimes the fastest rates. And we found this to occur in about 38 different states. And in 36 of those, we found disparities between who was given fast and slow internet.
And it wasn't just disparities in the speed of the internet. There was also some weird stuff happening with pricing, according to your reporting.
That's right. When you look at the cost per megabit per second, certain households were paying about 400 times as much for internet. And this tended to fall on lower income communities, those that had more people of color, and also historically redlined areas.
Can you give me a concrete example of what that looked like?
Sure. So Kansas City is a city that is historically segregated north to south on Troost Avenue. When we looked at addresses in the side that's traditionally the white side, they tended to be fiber speeds, right? So that's like 200 megabits per second or higher from AT&T for $55. When you look at the other border that was traditionally segregated to people of color, we found mostly slow speeds that were so slow that the FCC doesn't even consider it to be broadband. We found that, you know, you could walk three blocks and the speeds would be completely different, as would the demographics of the area.
But for the same price.
For the same price.
What did that mean in terms of impact for the residents of these communities, especially during the pandemic when so many of us were learning and working remotely?
So we talked to residents all over the place. Someone in Detroit was working on their thesis and could not attend classes. They couldn't go to virtual church events. We talked to a council person in Las Vegas whose speeds were so slow that students could not attend their classes either.
But what about this argument that some of these service providers make that it is really expensive to expand access to high-speed broadband, and that, frankly, in some of these low-income communities, they're not going to make that money back, and so they have to charge more?
We actually tried to control for many of these business factors, like population density, the number of competitors, the existing broadband adoption rates of those areas. And we tried to see if the disparities that we observed were eliminated if we accounted for those factors. And in most cases, they did not.
The FCC has this program, the Affordable Connectivity Program, where people who are lower income can have access to subsidized or sometimes even free internet access. How did that play into your findings and also how these internet service providers are thinking about how they connect communities?
So we found that they don't tell you if you qualify for these programs or not. You're expected to go to a government site and separately apply for that subsidy. And when you do, it goes directly to the provider.
I should point out, when we heard back from AT&T, the company spokesperson pointed out that one of the examples you use in your story, an extended internet outage in one of the communities you reported on, Hope Village in Detroit, was due to a flood and ongoing equipment theft. How do you account for these kinds of variations of bad weather and crime, frankly, in your reporting on this?
So although this did affect the internet reliability of Hope Village and the community there, it did not affect the underlying data, which is across these 36 different cities, including Detroit, we still found that these areas were given the slowest speeds for the same price as faster speeds in more affluent and whiter parts of town.
Leon Yin with the markup. And now for some related links. You can read the report from Leon Yin and his colleague Aaron Sankin on our website, marketplacetech.org. We also reached out to AT&T, Verizon, Earthlink, and CenturyLink. AT&T and Lumen, the company that owns CenturyLink, got back to us ahead of our deadline, and you can read their responses on our site. The markup team also included the responses it received from the companies in its story. I was talking with Leon about the FCC's Affordable Connectivity Program. Pretty much, if you're eligible for government assistance like SNAP, Medicaid, WIC, or a bunch of other income-based programs, you probably also qualify for internet subsidies. We'll link to the FCC's chart on eligibility based on the number of people in your household and to the program itself if you want to apply. In case you want to see if there are similar disparities to what Leon was talking about in your community, the markup has a GitHub repository with data for dozens of cities. Jesus Alvarado and Daniel Shin produce our show. Gary O'Keefe and Becca Weinman are our engineers this week. Amanda Peacher is the interim senior producer. I'm Kimberly Adams, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.